My guest today discovered her passion in operations when she helped grow an early stage startup with no revenue to north of $10 million in revenue. After parting ways with the organization, she started her own business and began helping other businesses with their operations. She is an operations strategist who knows how to go in and help business owners defrictionalize behind the scenes so that the business can run without them. But she ran into a problem. She had a baby, and one night in the hospital, her whole world came crumbling down. She began making major changes in her business and eventually went on to write the book, The Sabbatical Method, How to Leverage Rest and Grow Your Business. Her name is Allison Caffrey. This is the Mindshift Podcast, where we share real stories, real strategies that will help you find real success. This is the place to hear from people just like you who have taken their ideas, goals, and dreams from a point of inspiration to realization, or when life knocked them down, from a point of breakdown to breakthrough. I'm your host, Daryl Evans. Let's get started with today's episode. Hey, Allison, welcome to the Mindshift Podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me, Daryl.
I'm excited. I know that when your team reached out to me and I saw the title of your book, I was like, yes, oh yeah, we need to have a conversation. I think it took us a little while to get it connected and get us put together. But I think that, among other things, we're going to have a rich conversation for those that are entrepreneurs with your operational efficiency and expertise background. I think we're going to pull apart some topics there. And then also, I love this topic of a sabbatical, and it's something that I have never done. So I'm going to be asking a little bit of questions from my own desire, if you'll oblige me and coach me a little bit through this. So I'm excited. But before we get started, where are you joining us from in the world?
Yeah, I'm in Eastern Pennsylvania. It's a little bit of a gloomy day, but summer on the East Coast is always such a fun time. Like, we spend lots of time at the beach, and my kids love the beach, and it's just such a high vibe time right now.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Tell us about your backstory. You've got two boys. You're CEO, founder of your own company. You've authored a book. Got two little ones under three. Catch everybody up on who Allison is.
Yeah, my iron is in a lot of fires. And it's funny because I feel like you don't realize it until someone perhaps interviews you on a podcast, or you have to put a bio together and you're like, dang, I did all that stuff. But yeah, so I started Operations Agency in 2018. I'm an operations strategist. I partner with small businesses to help just defrictionalize things behind the scenes. I got started in ops just out of college. I helped grow an early stage startup, from no revenue to about eight figures years in revenue. And we were in a position where we were like hiring and doing all the things and launching different products and services. And it just got really hectic really fast. And when I was parting ways with that organization, my husband was in the military at the time, and we were moving. He got asked to join an elite group in Fort Campbell, Kentucky. And I remember telling the founder, I was like, hey, I really need to move on. This is a wonderful opportunity for my husband. And he was like, please, please, please give me a 90-day transition period. He was just like, I remember hearing him ask me for this, and I was like in the car on the way home, and I was just kind of shocked. I was like, you know, I thought owning your business was meaning that it was freedom, and how must this feel for him to feel so dependent on a person? And I just really empathized at the time, having not even owned my own business. I just assumed that owning your own shop meant that you had control, that you had agency over pretty much everything, right? And I quickly learned after going out on my own shortly thereafter, when I had a line of people being like, hey, can you do for me what you did for that guy in 90 days? I was like, sure. So then I suddenly had a business, and I was working with people on their operations, and I quickly realized that a lot of times folks start businesses because, you know, they have an incredible way to generate impact and income for their clients, their customers, you know, whatever that looks like. And then they end up running a business. And so I have taken on the professional organizer role, both at work and at my home. You know, it wasn't really until I became a mom that I realized how demanding, you know, running a business and running a family can be, and how intentional we really do need to be about our time. So fast forward about 2.5 years later in Operations Agency, I've got a small team. I'm working with a handful of clients, and I have my first son. And I remember being in the hospital. I had just, you know, moved into the kind of permanent room room post-birth, you know, where we would be spending the night. And I have this photo of me and my first baby, and we're all very happy. Everything was just very chaotic, but now suddenly was very peaceful. He was sleeping. And then the very next moment, I remember I had picked up my phone to check emails and like respond to my team and be on Slack. And Daryl, it was confronting. I was like, here I am, the systems gal. And I am very literally, there are very few times in life where you're really given such a literal demonstration of what your priorities might be. And I was literally putting down my baby in the bassinet to pick up my phone to dialogue back and forth with my team and my clients. Wow. And so I knew at that time, I was like, you know, there are probably some things that I can focus on that make creating systems and make creating a business that can function and thrive independently of you a little bit more accessible to both myself and to people I was working with at the time.
Wow. So I can't empathize with being in the hospital with the baby after giving birth. That part, I don't have that experience, but I definitely can empathize with one of the biggest pain points from a standpoint of trying to enjoy that life, that love, that moment that you just can't get back, or those moments that you can't get back early in my entrepreneurial days. And in my case, it was a phone call and a series of text messages. This is a little bit before Slack. I'm a little bit older than you. But in my early 30s, I remembered this like it was yesterday. And without the depth of the joy of motherhood, it was just a pure joy of mine to be involved in this activity. And I remembered getting out of this activity, or should I say midway through this activity, I noticed the text and I noticed that there were three voicemails. This is on a Saturday. The office is open Monday through Friday. I generally work 60 hours a week during those hours. And why is it that today, in this hour, on this day, it's an emergency when you had 60 other hours to reach me? And it became at that moment unacceptable ever again for me to operate in that sort of, what you say was a moment of growth that says, you've got to decide what are the rules of engagement in this business. Because it wasn't just that message. It had been other messages. It was just that one that tipped me over. Yeah. Sure. So in your case, you're in the hospital room and it tipped you over. And I love what you said, although I know it was a painful realization, but here you are teaching people systems. And it was an awareness of one that you didn't, maybe you had overlooked in your own world, right? So let me back up to that startup opportunity where you were asked to give a 90-day notice. What did you do? Because if I heard you right, you helped build systems for that business because you empathized with this founder who was essentially lost since you were leaving. Is that what you were saying, but you didn't say?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. When you work with businesses, I think, and you realize like how far they can get without a lot of structure, sometimes you think that, especially because we are always putting the highlight reels on social media and we're putting our best foot forward in any sort of networking opportunities or whatever, you just consider that everybody's way buttoned up behind the scenes and you're the only one that has a lot of mess. And that's actually fundamentally not true, right? A lot of people really just operate in their own specific gifts for a long time. And then they kind of pick their head up and say, oh, wow, I was ignoring this other thing over here. And I think that's what that founder did. He just trusted really, surely that I had things buttoned up, which I did, but everything still flowed through me. So I was kind of the quote unquote weak point of the business in that sense, because if I stepped out, then everything was going to be crumbling around me. Mm-hmm. So what I did was over those, 90 days that I worked to kind of make my transition plan and help usher the team in to be more successful after my departure, really what I did was I just laid an operational foundation, right? I said, here's how we operate. Here are the rules of engagement. Here's how we run projects. Here's how we run our core services. Here's how we systematically create, quarterly initiatives and crush those. And then here's the data that kind of sits on top and supports everything and shows us how we're doing, basically. And so those just core functions, they sound really, I just kind of breezed through them like they were really simple, right? Like it takes a little bit of time. Yeah. And some unearthing. And I think that really at the end of the day, what we need to do is we need to make sure that we have some transparency internally, because I think as things shift, as people move around, as technology changes and all of those things, at least if we know what's happening, we can make some concrete decisions on what's for us and what's not for us and, what we should do in circumstances where things, unexpectedly come up.
Yeah. At what stage was this business? How many years had the company been around? What was the size of the team, if you don't mind sharing. And just,
yeah, sure.
And I'm asking because I get a lot of, we've got a lot of startups, or should I say solopreneur founders that are here, whether they run mm-hmm. SaaS or digital or service-based businesses. And I know when I was a solopreneur, multiple times I've started solopreneur-ish businesses with just very small, nimble teams. You sometimes wonder, you don't realize there is risk like you just described, but how big was this company? How many employees? And maybe a roundabout area of top line revenue?
Yeah. So we were about 8 figures in top line when I left. So I was there for 2.5 years. And then really, I think they were early stage 8 figures, like 12.
Okay.
12 million in revenue.
Okay.
And really the big thing that I think is important to note is that I was the first hire. We had about a 4-person team the first year, and I did every single thing. And so I think that though those opportunities are really helpful, right? Someone who kind of comes in and learns every single thing. And if they're staying there, and that's wonderful, it's a great opportunity. But I consider that type of hire a unicorn hire. I mean, it's really, really commonly referred in our industry, right? Like the unicorn hire who onboard clients, and they can do a little bit of digital marketing, and they can also balance the books, right? Like that 100%. Person, they say, oh, we got a unicorn hire. How can I get that person? I think it's one of the most damaging things that can happen to a business in the early stages is to get that unicorn person, because yes, it feels wonderful right now. But down the line, we start to optimize our business based on the cost of that unicorn, based on the efficiency of that unicorn, based on the specific skill set of that unicorn. And we don't actually take into account that perhaps that person might be doing 3 micro jobs that have 3 micro skill sets that we need to staff 3 salaries for down the line, right? 100%. And so it can start to kind of cloud. So when I left that business, we were doing about 12 million in revenue. And then we were also managing about 30 team members between employees and contractors. And it was a really still a nimble team for the revenue point. And we were doing really well in terms of managing all of that. It was, events, coaching, PR, a little bit of digital marketing agency stuff, a little bit of product stuff. So we were kind of like all over the map, mm-hmm. transparently. And that's one of the reasons I think we were able to grow so big so fast. But really laying the foundation at that time operationally for that business allowed for it to be able to grow and, in huge, huge ways. I mean, they do business and have partnerships with Grant Cardone and like lots of big players mm-hmm. in the space. And I think that at the time, right, had we not kind of gone through that process, whether I was, long-term involved or not, mm-hmm. I think it was a cool forcing function to say, okay, Allison's going somewhere. What would happen if Allison leaves? And so that's one of the biggest reasons why I developed the sabbatical method. And one of the reasons why I personally feel like it's such a wonderful exercise to go through before any person leaves your team, before you yourself need to take a vacation or, a time off for whatever reason to be with your family. It's really helpful to take that rest period before it's kind of forced upon you. And then you feel like it's a really stressful, situation to try to get things prepared before somebody leaves.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so thank you for the context. So 12 million, 30 people, sure. It was a SaaS business or?
We were in, like I said, we did like coaching and we did a little bit of digital marketing. We had a product. It was kind of all over the map.
Okay.
So I would say they're probably coaching predominantly now.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah.
So in 90 days, and we'll come out of that origin story, but I think there's so much to be said there because there are some people listening to this and they're doing their first 100,000. There's some here doing 1 million or 10. Mm-hmm. And there's different levels of operational efficiencies that you go through in each stage, right? And I think what's interesting is you said over that next 90 days, you went through those, I think it was 5 or 6 or 7 kind of idea points. What was your end game? Meaning, what was your goal? I just want to talk through the end result of that 90-day period. We'll kind of back into some of the more tactical and practical ideas.
Sure. But
I love the way you said it. Over the next 90 days, I did this. What was your end goal?
What I wanted to do, and I think what the founder was really looking for in terms of really just like easing his anxiety around a person leaving, was really to make the business able to function independently of any one person.
Mm. We have a phrase in our world. We say it's a terrible phrase, but we have used it. What if they get hit by a bus?
I hear this all the time.
I know it's terrible to think of, but we have always said, what if we get hit by a bus? You can't have the communication in your email because what if you get hit by a bus? You can't have the system on your desktop because anyway, I just thought it was very interesting, right? Be able to run without.
No, it's true. Mm-hmm. I hear it all the time. And honestly, a lot of people say, well, you know, what if you got hit by a bus? Or what if you didn't come into work tomorrow? Or what if, you know, you suddenly quit, right? We've all operated very much out of fear in this way, right? And so my challenge is that instead of operating out of fear, right, and you want to consider that maybe instead of leaving your organization, someone wants to ascend into a leadership role, how do we staff under them, right? How do we create the transparency to allow our business to break itself, right? If we're growing, right? Mm-hmm. If we're growing, mm-hmm. we're breaking. Yeah. And so we need to be able to systematically repair, right? Plug people into places and be able to train them, get them up and running, make sure that they understand what's expected of them. So that's what I feel like operations gives, you know, to small businesses, right? It allows us to be a little bit more nimble, a little bit more really, how do I put it? A little bit more trustworthy of what we have behind us. I know so many founders, especially service providers, right? They show up to enrollment conversations, networking events, and they're like, almost scared to close deals because they know what it means.
Oh, stop preaching. She's preaching.
It's so true, right?
And if I close this deal, if I close this deal, what's it going to mean to my work life?
Yes,
my calendar can't handle anything else. Yeah, my calendar. Totally. Yeah, I get it. Oh, that's so funny. I mean, I'm not laughing. I'm laughing because I knew this was going to come out. So for those listening, right, Allison is going to be preaching some truths and some pain that I have lived. And unfortunately, the way I respond is through laughter, because even in the moment when I was going through it, I wanted to cry. And maybe if I've gotten by it, I can laugh at myself, but it was painful. And if you're listening to this, we're going to dig into some practical ideas. But more importantly, Allison, I really want to go back to your story, right? I mean, let's get into your story, because in your moment in the hospital with your first child, there was a realization that there was some work to do in your own business. We all have this, right? We all have to face the fact that in our own expertise, we've left some open loops in our own world, right? And it sucks when it happens, and it's painful, and we shed some tears, and we go through some stress and anxiety. But I think out of that, let's talk about your growth since then and sort of how you decided to operate going forward. Mindshift method, by the way, in my world, mindshift method is make peace with the facts, whether we like them or not. Doesn't mean we can change the facts. Number two is make a new decision about those facts. And so you had some new facts. The phone is going off and I'm slacking and my baby's in the bassinet and this is wrong. It's just wrong. Mm-hmm. It's wrong in this moment. So your new decision was what? Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So my decision was I needed to build trust, right? Trust in my team. And the way that I did that, I would say deliberately, because I think that it was one thing to understand like what the expectations were, but then the next level really is to understand what decisions need to be made. And so I kind of was in a position where we had a lot of really good SOPs. We had really solid consistency around projects. And honestly, we did the same for our clients. But then the next kind of layer that I was able to serve my clients with, and also it's actually a really cool gift that I get to grow a business alongside of helping others grow theirs and really systematize theirs. Because I get to use things behind the scenes in my business and say, hey, listen, this is what worked for us. So it's really helpful, I think. So I really went into, you know, the experience kind of post having my first son, being like, hey, listen, how can I create a scenario where I trust that you are making decisions that are, you know, really serving the overall, you know, goal that we have for our clients, you know, the goals that we have for the business. And so it was kind of layering on this like management level, you know, decision-making process, which I felt really created a lot of clarity behind the scenes for my team. Things like how much money should I spend to solve a problem? You know, what numbers need to look like what in order for me to enact certain processes, right? Like if, for example, our customer retention starts dipping down, like what specifically might we start to look at? Who might be, you know, tapped on the shoulder to help us kind of rectify some of that stuff? And so I think that what we do, especially when we start to create some systems, is it's kind of one project to centralize and make everything very transparent. But it's another, similar to like getting a spreadsheet full of data, right? It's another thing to start to make informed decisions about some of that stuff and really be able to, you know, get up above the business and make some of those decisions. So what I did was I started really dosing my business with micro hits of Allie rests. I go and hang out with my kid. I created those barriers and those blockers. I was like, every day at 3:30, I am finished working. I am absolutely done. I take every Friday off now, and I have done so actually for a very long time. I like infamously take Friday off. And that has been something really cool that I've implemented since that I feel like is a wonderful reminder that like my business shouldn't creep out into my personal life. If I'm very strict with the amount of time that I have to focus on specific things in the business, not only does my personal life and my family life not suffer, but also too, my business learns how to almost prioritize what I need to be doing for me because I only have that small period of time. So I focus on creating relationships, creating content, really serving our, you know, clients with high level strategy and really defrictionalizing how they might look at how their business is set up. And then I really help my team define like, what is that for them? I love that the term focus and that the term priority is like, it's very singular, right? There's not like multiple focus or priorities. Like, sure, yes, they are words, but I think in definition, they are singular. So I was really challenged after my first son to consider what is my focus, right? Like, what is the number one thing that I can kind of use as a filter to understand if it's not serving that number one thing, that number one focus, then it's not going to be on my calendar.
Wow. So, oh, that's so good. So good. I love what you said. Would you call them alley breaks? Is that what you?
Yeah. Like micro doses of alley rest.
Alley rest. Alley rest. I like that. You ought to coin that phrase, alley rest. No, it's interesting, right? So I love what you said. And I just want to articulate a couple of thoughts on my side to some of the realizations that I had to put in my world. For example, no email before a certain time of the day, no social media before a certain time of the day, no appointments before a certain time of the day, dinner from 5 to 7 with my family 5 days a week. Every now and then I've got a board meeting because I sit on a board. But with general, what you're saying is these moments of structure, micro moments of structure, micro moments of commitments and decisions that, oh, no, no, this during this time belongs to this activity. And like you said, I'm going to ask anyway, but what's your opinion about multitasking? Let's just get it out the way now.
Yeah, it's a farce. I'm sure of it. The only time I think it sort of applies transparently is I am a horrible meditator. I've been told by almost every guru I ever follow that I should be meditating in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I am just perhaps not a meditator in the traditional sense. Mm-hmm. Where I find meditative practices are in activities that don't take basically any mental bandwidth. Yes. So running for me is a huge one, right? My body is occupied in one thing so that my mind can float away, accept new ideas, you know, be really clear. I find that also with yard work. I really do love working in our yard, weeding, picking up sticks, mowing the lawn, doing the whole deal. Like I find it very helpful to my family. And it's also very easy to conceptualize. And then my thoughts just kind of drift. Mm-hmm. I think that if you're really looking to focus and do some deep work, I have this 90-90 principle that I really operate by specifically for myself. And I actually do it with my team as well. I say 90 minutes of focus daily for 90 days, right? So for a 90-day period, commit to one thing to block in 90 minutes intentionally to do some deep work on. Whether that is, you know, if you're overdue to move your body a lot, you know, it doesn't need to just be work, right? Yeah. And so block that time intentionally and do it first thing in the morning. Like that's how I wrote my book, The Sabbatical Method. Over 90 days, I blocked 90 minutes from 5 o'clock in the morning to 6:30 in the morning. I wrote my pages, I edited my pages, I made the marketing material, and I did it for 90 days. And here we go. We've got a beautiful book here to grace the homes of all of the people that I wish to serve. And transparently, it's not reinventing the wheel. A lot of the things I think that we overlook for these tips, these tricks, these tactics, these shiny objects, we really do. We overlook some of the really solid basics that have gotten people really, really far, right? Like establishing habits and focus points and building in time to rest and being intentional about our calendar and saying no.
Right? Oh my geez. Saying no.
It's very, very basic.
I have it, you know, it is basic perhaps, but I think in many cases, there is a bit of a problem in the entrepreneurial space today of this hustle and grind 24/7 mentality. And there's a little bit of, if you just look at social media today, now I grew up, didn't have social media. I didn't have the visual stimulation that could make me believe that the journey was something other than what it really is. And so I just happened to interview a venture capitalist and that show will come out. And the reality of entrepreneurship is, and he said it is as great as I've ever thought about it. And it is solving one problem and moving to the next problem and solving that and moving to the next problem and solving that.
entrepreneurship isn't just, oh, I own the business and la, 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 la. And people always say, oh, I wish I was in your shoes. What are you sure? Are you sure? Right? You have no idea where these shoes have to track. And so I think of what you said in terms of this intentional, you know, just these alley rest moments. I call the, you know, your idea about meditating, right? I first got introduced to meditation 13 years ago, same thing. It's just something to do and add into your personal development, mindfulness practice. I'm already an athlete, you know, so I do a variety of athletic sports and I'm like you. I started running in the pandemic and I actually believe, to me, while my body has to focus on breathing, striding, and running outside, you got to be careful what you step on. So you got to be, your mind's focused on that. It can't be focused on this, that, or the other thing that's going on with your clients. And so I do believe that what you said is true. Let's jump into the structure of the sabbatical method, because you've got a framework for the method. And the first time I even thought about the word sabbatical, it was with one of my guests in the past, who, Katarina Costullo, I hope I pronounced her name correctly. And I remember her talking to me about her sabbatical and her decision after she left Google, before she started her business, to take 6 months off and just take time with her family, because she knew what it meant. She'd just come out of a serious grind with Google, very successful, and was going to go do her own thing. But she got very intentional. I remember when she brought it up, it struck me odd. And I spent more time talking to her about that. And she said, no one really ever cared. And so I'm very much interested in how you think about the sabbatical method from your book. So let's uncover that for the audience so they can understand your framework and thinking for the sabbatical method.
Yeah, sure. So the sabbatical method is kind of like hard 75, but for, you know, structuring your business, right? So if you are in need of a hard reset, right, that is kind of what the book is really meant to do, is say, hey, listen, we all know we're overdue to create systems. Let's recognize this and focus on building the muscle over the next 90 days. And then how can we weave rest into how we operate long term, right? Because nobody gets back in shape, gets a six pack, and then just like stops working out on day 91, right? We got to like weave it into how we do things now, right? So that's why I wrote the book. I really understood that I needed to meet some people where they were at. And transparently, a lot of times, especially through, you know, like talking with folks about the book and about the method overall, I usually get kind of two answers when I ask, like, you know, what do you think of when you think of a sabbatical, right? And so I get the Fortune 50 CEO, access to a lot of resources, is able to take 6 months on this Parisian, you know, leave, right? They have money, they have a team supporting them. It's like very, almost like unattainable,
yes,
right?
100%.
And then I hear this.
100%. 100%.
And the second thing I hear is that someone is really hit a brick wall and they're voluntold that they need to take some time off from their business, whether they've been ignoring their physical health, their mental health, whether they just have kind of grinded their team to the bone and everybody's like, I'm fed up, I can't do this here anymore, because I've known those companies as well. And so we really have both ends of the spectrum here. And I think that it's almost, you know, you try to avoid one, right? But you know, you might never be able to hit the other one, which is so infuriating. So that's why I said, why can we not leverage the benefits of rest before we experience the burnout or the brick wall? And be able to channel what some of the most successful CEOs do, I mean, on a consistent basis. I know that Bill Gates takes his infamous Think Week. I know that the founder of, you know, Patagonia has done this in the past. I mean, these people are clearly dialed into something that allows them to step away from the business operation so that they can see very clearly the path for the next phase of how things are going and how they can really serve. So that's what the sabbatical method is. It's a hard reset and a lifestyle change, so you can implement rest more strategically into your business. And the methodology really is founded in repairing. Because in every high performance plan, whether you're summiting Everest, whether you are, you know, running a marathon or doing any sort of, you know, gigantic physical feat, woven in there are rest points, right? And they're really geared to rebuild, right? They're really testing the boundaries of what you can do. And then you take those days of rest or a week of rest to actually rebuild your muscles stronger for the next phase of the training plan. And so my opinion is that rest in our business, right, looks like the founder taking a step back to consider how they might create some systems or some operations to support them behind the scenes, right? Rebuild their muscles back so that the next time they do a project, launch a new product, you know, code a new feature, they don't feel like everybody's hair is on fire and they can handle it with a little bit more ease.
I love the way you broke that down. I mean, I love just the idea because you started with the idea that, you know, the sabbatical, as we probably have heard of it, is this thing that's unattainable. It's the only the wealthy can do it. It's, oh, the other person's company's running. I think there's I don't know where I heard this, but some years ago, they talked about, and I don't know where it came from, and I'm going to paraphrase and can't remember who to give credit to or where I heard it from, but it went something like this. As a CEO, if you want to know how well your company's gone, you have to be gone at least a month from your company to know whether you've actually have stability in your company. You really know you hit it if you can be gone a year and the company is actually doing better when you get back than when you were there. But again, both of those scenarios, depending on where you come from, some of us as entrepreneurs, I know I went 8 or 9 years as an entrepreneur, never took 2 weeks completely together back to back. I took what I called power weekends, Thursday through Sundays. And I did those. Those were my alley rest periods, right? but what I thought was, and there was a window where I thought that was all I could do. And I think what you said earlier too, not to just belabor it, but you said it was trust. I asked you what that 90-day goal was, or what you were going to do after the hospital. I'm sorry, in the hospital, and you said to build more trust. And I thought that was big because ultimately, when we hold all of the cards in our businesses, whatever role, you might be the CEO, you might be the founder, you might be the COO, you might be the head of marketing, but if all roads lead to you, it's because you don't trust. And I remember someone in our company back in 2013, 14, he was fantastic. He was there at the beginning. And all roads led to him for about 3.5 years in this department of our business. And at the time that we started to unbundle that and attempt to unbundle that, we got massive resistance, massive. And it ultimately led to us having to go separate ways because he wasn't willing. And I don't know what it was, but he could have been threatened. I don't know what it was, but it's like his self-worth was seemingly tied to the fact that he knew all those things. So Where does I want to talk from a perspective of an entrepreneur right now who is maybe on the smaller side. Maybe they're a startup, they're a solopreneur, or maybe they've got a small team, couple of VAs, that kind of thing. And I know I've heard something from you in my research leading to this call that you believe in setting up SOPs, you taking micro moments to set up SOPs. I'm a big fan of what I heard. I'd like you to explain it here. Mm-hmm. But you said doing screencast videos is one of the best ways to set up SOPs. And I know I've been a fan since there's a platform that's not even around anymore. It's called Jing. I don't know if anybody remembers that, but I started doing it on Jing back in the day. But I'd love for you to spend a moment there because there are some companies and entrepreneurs and founders here listening that may not have the ability to go afford a team or a VA or a company to come in like yours. But talk to them about where to begin with this idea of setting up SOPs and getting some systems out of their head and into a place.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll kind of anchor this in kind of, I have three sabbatical method personalities. So I know that even if it seems like it's super unattainable to even take 2 weeks off, you know, back to back, like you said, Daryl, right? And you have this power weekend, some folks actually haven't even been able to do the power weekends thing, right? For a very long time, right? They're really burning the candle at both ends. They've really taught their business to just kind of suck everything out of them. And so they spend a lot of time in it. So my three sabbatical method personalities are first and foremost the assister, right? You can consider it like basketball, right? You pass it to the person who's ultimately going to score, right? But you're setting them up for success. This looks like the screencast method, right? You are in a position where you record your screen, you show somebody how to do something, you centralize it into a knowledge base. Then that way, after, you know, maybe a couple of days go by and the task comes back up on the to-do list again, you can send just that thing and then you can kind of go on your merry way and trust that somebody else is going to get the result like you would get it. The second personality is called the trainer. I was inspired by Sean T, inventor of Insanity, who actually came and did a live session at my community gym in my hometown. So he's actually from the neighboring town of mine in New Jersey called Deptford.
So I did Insanity.
Yes, me too.
2010. Big fan. That was my introduction to Beachbody.
Yes, it's amazing. 100%. So he was amazing. He's a wonderful trainer. And what I think he does really well is he says, this is the lifestyle coach that I need to be for my people. And then they can take it back in and make it whatever they want, right? He kind of like lays the foundation for them and then they can kind of ad lib. So that's the second sabbatical method personality. So if you have a team, if you have some sort of knowledge base already set up, if you've already found yourself kind of working the screencast muscle, then you can start to say, hey, listen, this is the high level objective. Here's how I would make some of these decisions. What do you think might be the next best step? This is where we start to create some agreements with our team and start to transfer some of that trust over, right? Screencasts, although seemingly delegatable, still takes a lot of, okay, this is exactly what I want you to do, right? It's more of kind of that practice. So then the third sabbatical method personality is the board member, right? Where we really can stay in the high level strategic function of our business, really steer the ship and say, okay, I'm setting the precedent for our quarterly goals. Let's just say, for example, setting everybody's focus, but they have the assisting, right? They have the knowledge base to support them, the expectations, and then they also have the training, right? Or the coaching to be able to understand how I might make some of these decisions and how I might be able to tackle some of the things that we're going to come up against in terms of, you know, issues or whatever. So I lay those three out. I recommend for sure starting with the first one. If you're finding yourself small team, unable to take a lot of time off, a lot of the business depends on transferring your time into it in order to produce revenue and profit and all the stuff that comes out. I think it's helpful to start building that screencast muscle. I personally use Loom. It goes right in my Chrome extension. And what I do is I just sync it up with my to-do list. So if I find that I'm doing something more than one time, I record my screen. Even if I don't have plans to pass it off just yet, I make sure that it's there. And then that way, when I have a team member, like we're actually personally, we're hiring an operations agency and I just extended an offer yesterday to a new team member. I'm really excited for her to join, but I'm actually really more excited for her to join because we have a lot of training for her role. So like making that offer, the first 2 weeks or so is really only going to be me jumping in meetings to answer questions about trainings I've already created, which feels so much more frictionless than if I had to spend 2 weeks shadowing, you know, she's joining every single call with me, working through some stuff. We already have a really cool archive for her that she can go in and just kind of, you know, get in and get her hands dirty.
I love it. I love it. And you know, it relieves the pressure of expanding your business because a lot of times you talked about it at the sales side of it, but the reality is you've got to build it before you need it, right? One of the most impactful exercises I went through was when I hired my first coach in business in 2003. I think it was early that year. I'd come off of a 2002 where I doubled my business from 2001. And that sounds good until you realize you're working bell to bell, which is sun up to sundown. You grab something to eat, maybe, and then you get back to work again till midnight. And I remember what she told me. She says, well, I hope you don't intend to bring on any new business in the next 90 days. And I said, well, what do you mean? And she goes, well, we're going to figure out how you do things here because that has to get documented. And of course, they use the probably the biggest example that many of us use in the world of operational efficiency, and that's McDonald's. And she goes, yes.
Love that you mentioned McDonald's.
Yes. Now, I worked for Taco Bell. So I worked for Taco Bell for 11 years coming up. But McDonald's is the standard of the topic. And everybody else borrowed it from them, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But the reality was she worked me through an exercise. And in the business I was in at the time, we identified 63 things that had to happen from this point to this point. Now, that sounded like a lot. But the point was, we just need to get it on paper and visualize exactly what's actually happening to create success here. Then we're going to identify what are the things that only you can do. You still might have to do all of them right now because you're already doing them. But we're going to identify the ones that only matter to you, which is what you said earlier. And then we're going to at least now have some acknowledgement. I remember doing this exercise when I started the podcast. And we built an SOP, a standard operating procedure for how do we acquire guests? How do we schedule them? How do we remind them? How do we get them to show up? How do we publish? How do we I was doing it all myself. I admitted offline before we started that I ran this podcast by myself with no help, no team, no nothing until my executive assistant, I hired her and she looked at me like I was an idiot. And she practically said, you know, you're an idiot, right? But I actually have a zest. I actually, maybe to a fault, I believe that I can't outsource what I don't understand. And so probably I did it too long, but I knew exactly what I wanted to have happen because I had to produce it myself. but then I had a clear document. So the screen capture is fantastic. Loom is fantastic. It's actually what I use as well. And I love that you sometimes catch yourself right in the moment of doing it to just go ahead and turn on Loom and make it available. Mm-hmm. And I think it's super important for anybody listening right now, if you haven't, don't wait until you get to the spot where you're burned out. Don't wait till you, you know, and you might be there today. So actually, Allison, let's talk about that. What do you tell the person today who is maybe they've gone too far, they haven't had early rest periods, they haven't had a power weekend, they haven't had a week off in a while, they're getting calls at 6, 7, and 8. I'll tell you one that drives me bananas, and I think even this is a win. Can you do meetings with clients, customers, or team members, or potential business partners or vendors without your phone being on? Can you just put that on airplane mode? Or is it zipping and zzz and is it beeping and you're interrupting the time that you were supposed to be focused on the other thing? I think that even is a system. But what would you tell the person who is a little bit stretched, overwhelmed, overworked, they don't know what to do, they know they need to do something? How would you instruct them, coach them today? And I know, I don't know if it's super, super relevant, but maybe you want to point people to this operational, can your business function with you quiz. I don't know if that's something you want to talk about, but talk to the person right now who's at their wit's end and they know they need something.
Yeah. So my quiz is really helpful. It's called Can Your Business Function Without You? And it's just a series of questions to identify where you might be if you're considering taking some time off. What I would say to the person who perhaps is just feeling really overwhelmed is just to consider how they might schedule in, perhaps it's 20 minutes twice a day, to just be for a second, like to just stop everything, put the phone on airplane mode, go walk outside. Transparently, I started doing that when I had my first son. I would just go outside and put my feet on the ground and just breathe for a second, be there for a second. I think that if the day feels like it's a runaway train, right, you can kind of use that tiny little dose of, I'm going to walk away from my stuff for a second. I can afford to take 20 minutes, right? It's not, you know, I'm not closing my computer at 6 p.m. I'm not ignoring the task list and letting it build up for tomorrow. It's just 20 minutes of just a quick mental reset. And again, this is the very first micro dose of rest, right? You want to be in a position to say, I'm in control here. I'm going to take a break and I'm going to refresh myself, walk back to my computer and to my task list, at least feeling a little bit more energetically, you know, available to be able to, you know, kind of mount and solve the problems that, you know, we need to have, you know, solved throughout the day. The second really big thing is your calendar. I know that a lot of folks talk about how you block your calendar. And I know that a lot of creatives specifically are like, I don't want a schedule. I love operating without a schedule. And so my encouragement to you, especially as a mom of two young boys who very consistently break my schedules and it like drives me to the end of the earth, especially as an operations person, I'm like very hyper scheduled. I like live and die by my schedule. But the encouragement I'll make is be committed to having a schedule. Don't be committed to the schedule. Right? So your business, if it's growing, it should be breaking stuff. And you learn more about yourself, your capabilities, the needs of your clients, the needs of your business, the needs of your kids every single day. We're all growing infinitely into the time that we depart from this earth. And so I think just understanding that a schedule is necessary, but the schedule, you don't have to be married to it, right? You can change it. You can, you know, move things around. You can say, I actually have more energy to do this stuff, you know, from the 3 to 4 o'clock slot, which is totally not me. But I love you for that. And it's I think, really helpful to just consider that, you know, someone else's way of doing things might be helpful. And in practice, it's time to kind of add our own flavor so that it sticks with us.
I love it. I love it. Those are two fantastic. I mean, even to the point of just taking a break, stepping outside, you know, I don't know for those since the pandemic, we had an office. I've been in office. I've worked at home part-time, mostly in the office full-time. And then the pandemic happened, as many people listening, and now we don't have offices, many of us. And I didn't realize the feeling and discomfort to a certain degree of not changing places, mm-hmm. right? You know, Starbucks became famous, not because of the 1600 variations that you can order the coffee, not because of their logo, not because it was green. And it wasn't just that it was a coffee shop that you could hang out and use Wi-Fi and meet your friends and chill. They became known as the third place, the place that landed between home and work. And I found that out later in my study of Starbucks. It was kind of funny. When I was in school, I studied finance, wanted to be a portfolio manager. And so I put Starbucks in my stock portfolio during my project for that year, either my junior or senior year, I can't remember. But I didn't really know about this concept of the third place. And that is now a different concept now. But to the point of working at home, even to the extent of just stepping outside, I will get out and walk and take a meeting on my, even if it's on Zoom, I can walk and do that meeting now outside if I don't have to look at a shared screen. So I love that tip. And then the next one was, of course, the calendar, the almighty calendar. I have a mentor that's, and I've been a calendar fanatic since I read the book Getting Things Done by David Allen.
Oh, great book.
Oh, it was one of the best. It was one of the ones recommended by that first coach who said I needed to get my life together. and it's been a-
So delicately, I'm sure.
Oh, it was super delicately. I'm being obviously very facetious in the way that they spoke it. But I think the other component though is the flexibility in the approach, right? I love what you said, because sometimes it's like, oh, this is the thing. No, be flexible. But make sure it's scheduled, because one of my other coaches says, you can't be productive in randomness. You can't be highly productive in randomness. You can't be a high performer if it's random. You have to have a schedule. And that is, again, two very simple things. How can people work with you? You're obviously, you've done it in your own life. You're doing it for other businesses. I love what you said at the beginning of the show earlier, that you get great joy and fulfillment out of watching growing your business while helping other businesses grow and systematize and get organized. And I understand that because I own a digital marketing agency. So I know exactly what that looks like, doing things to help companies grow and knowing the impact that trickles down to not only them, to their family, but to their community, to their staff and employees. I get where you were coming there. But how can people connect with you, and where would you want them to go find you?
Yeah, Operations Agency is my website. All the fun goodies are there. I'm super easy to get in touch with on LinkedIn. You can just find me, Allison Caffrey. I love talking shop. I love serving entrepreneurs. And my big goal is to make sure that entrepreneurs can stay in business and really build a business that serves their life and not the other way around. So I hope that anybody listening feels encouraged. Not that systems feel like this big looming project off in the distance that they know they need to be tackling, but feel like a failure because they haven't. Know that there's so many other people probably in your shoes right now, and that the simplest and most elegant option is probably the one that will help you in the short term, right? Just start simply, and then, you know, just get a little bit better every day.
And realize that it never really gets done. There's always refinements. There's always tweaks. And a lot of times I think we want to build something, fix something, and think it's on the shelf and we're just done. You and I were chatting a bit offline. SOPs are not static. They're just not. The business has changed.
It's so true.
Yeah. So I think it's great. Allison, thank you for taking the time, to write the book. That labor of love in and of itself, I respect. Anytime someone's put the time in to carve out time around having children, around running a business, and being dedicated to that task over that 90-day process, thank you for delivering on that commitment. And also thank you for helping the entrepreneurial community with this idea of getting and prioritizing rest and sanity and longevity and success, if you really think about it. And that can mean different things to other different people. It could be a growth curve that someone wants to go on, or it could be just someone wanting to have a great lifestyle business where they can have a child and have maternity leave without drama, and I can coach football, which is what I was doing at that time when my life said, hey, there needs to be a change. I was sitting on a sideline and I like to lose my mind because I was so passionate about coaching that game with those kids. So anyway, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for the work you're doing in the world. We are going to link up the book and your agency website, your Instagram, which I know you're prolific on. You're sharing tips and tidbits, and you've been on a number of other podcasts. So continue doing the work that you're doing. It's going to be blessing a lot of people. And the trickle-down effect is probably greater than we could even describe and see at this moment. So thank you so much for taking time to be here.
Thanks, Daryl. I really had a lovely time and I appreciate you having me on.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, my friend, thank you for listening and giving us some time today. Hope you learned something. Hope you took something away. Hopefully, if you need any assistance, you're going to reach out to Allison at operationsagency.com. Get her book, The Sabbatical Method. And if you're not inside the growth-driven entrepreneur community, we talk about these things continuously throughout the year. It's a free community that supports entrepreneurs who are of growth-minded intention to help their businesses market, grow, and scale.
And we'd invite you to join us over at growthdrivenentrepreneur.com. And we have free masterclasses every single month. We'd love to see you at the next one. If this is your first time here, I'm your host, Daryl Evans, and I'll see you next time. Take care. Hey, my friend, thanks again for listening to today's episode of the Mindshift Podcast. Listen, let's not have the conversation end here. Connect with me on social at Mr. Daryl Evans on almost all the platforms, with the exception of Facebook. My Facebook fan page is at Daryl Evans Fan. Until next week, remember, you're just one shift away from the breakthrough you're looking for.